Freedom Decrypted is sponsored by Think Penguin and Liberty Minded. And you are listening to Freedom Decrypted, streaming live from our Keene, New Hampshire studio. This is Christopher Wade, your host. And unfortunately, I have some bad news this week. Johnson has decided to leave the show, but we'll see if we can't bring in a new co-host. I don't know who that might be yet, but we've got lots of techie people here in Keene, New Hampshire. So hopefully, you know, next week maybe we'll have somebody else on. So this week is an interesting week, as every week is an interesting week, I suppose. But there's a bunch of interesting stories. Before I go on about what's coming up here, I do want to bring up the phone number. If you want to call into the show, you can do that if you're listening live. The number here is 1-866-703-2989. Again, the number is 1-866-703-2989. As always, if you're not listening live, so if you're listening on the radio, you're not listening live. If you're listening on LRN.FM, you're not listening live. You basically have to be at freedomdecrypted.com on a Saturday from 5 o'clock. Starting at 5, we start streaming. We go live. So if you're listening now, call into the show and you'll be able to get on the air live. And that might be actual radio too. Satellite. I forgot about satellite. This show, it does air on satellite as well. So what do we have today? So the first story is from Ars Technica, and I got bad news, people. The Europeans have approved a controversial new copyright law, and that's coming up. And then I've got a story on privacy. This is from The Verge. A privacy advocate being held at gunpoint after a license plate reader database mistake. And there's a lawsuit going on with that. And we also have a story from the court system in the U.S. Potential abuse prompts U.S. court to reevaluate treatment of piracy cases. Stories from Tort and Freak. And then we've got another story about academics issue emergency statement over Japan's proposed download law. There's going to be a lot of stories from Torn Freak today, just because it just so happens that, and this is it's kind of unfortunate, but most of the stories actually this week are mostly, unfortunately, copyright piracy stories rather than, most of these are like tech stories in a loose use of the word, but I'm not gonna continue on with that. We do have another story. I will bring this. I did promise on Free Talk Live, which is another show that I co-host on Fridays at from 7 to 10. I did promise those who were listening in, because we didn't get to this story, that if you listened into Freedom Decrypted, I would go ahead and cover it on this show. So the story is House Bill requires pornography. Actually, this is not the story that I promised, but this is another one I'm going to get to, hopefully. House Bill requires pornography filter on all phones and computers purchased in Kansas. And let's see here. This is the one I promised. Okay. So no link between violent video games and increased aggression in teens, study finds. So we'll get to that in a little bit later in the show. All right. So let's see. What do we have here? So the first story is the one from Ars Technica. We're covering the government approval of a controversial new copyright law. Controversial overhaul of Europeans' copyright laws overcame a key hurdle on Wednesday as a majority of European governments signaled support for the deal. This is bad news. This sets the stage for a pivotal vote by European Parliament that's expected to occur in March or April. Supporters of the legislation portray it as benign overhaul of copyright that will strengthen anti-piracy efforts. Opponents, on the other hand, warn that the most controversial provision, known as Article 13, could force internet platforms to adopt draconian filtering technology, which has already happened, I might point out. The cost to develop filtering technology could be particularly burdensome for smaller companies, critics say. Online service providers have struggled to balance free speech and piracy for close to two decades. Faced with this difficult trade-off, the authors of I don't think there is any trade-off, just a outright get rid of copyright. The authors of Article 13 have taken a rainbows and unicorns approach, promising stricter copyright enforcement, no wrongful takedowns of legitimate content, and minimal burdens on smaller technology platforms. Like, that's going to happen. What they're going to do is they're going to leave the EU and go for greener pastures. But it seems unlikely that the law can achieve all of these objectives simultaneously. No, of course it can't. We've already seen these filters being implemented in YouTube and some other platforms. And anybody who publishes to YouTube knows how draconian they are and how hard it can be these days to get content published on YouTube because of these filters. And digital rights groups suspect that users will wind up getting burned, both due to wrongful takedowns of legitimate content and because the burdens of mandatory filtering will make it harder to start a new online hosting service. Right. When is reducing competition ever a good thing? The law could hurt smaller online content platforms. For almost two decades, copyright law in both the United States and Europe has maintained an uneasy standoff between rights holders and major technology platforms. Online platforms were shielded from liability for infringing content uploaded without their knowledge, provided that they promptly remove infringing content once they become aware of it. You know, it's amazing that anybody even thinks that a platform should be held liable for the content that is being hosted on it when that content is being published by another party. You know, we don't hold manufacturers liable for gun violence just because, you know, you can use guns inappropriately. Why should you hold and the same thing would apply to like the postal system and similar. We don't hold these other parties liable just because their platforms or products or services are used in ways that may not be ideal in other circumstances. So why would you hold the hosting provider liable? Neither side of the copyright debate has been completely happy with this compromise. On the one hand, digital rights groups have complained that the rules give platforms an incentive to take down content first and ask questions later. This gives copyright holders broad power to censor other people's content. Yeah, and we're seeing that. I mean, just this week there was a story, which I'm not going to actually read here or get to. Well, I don't usually read all entire stories, but I'm going to bring up still about how BitTorrent.com has been basically companies have attempted to censor it 250-ish times over the years. And BitTorrent, for those who aren't aware, BitTorrent.com is a site that just offers torrent software. Okay, they're like the original creators of, you know, torrents, technology and so forth. And it's a totally neutral technology. It's no different than a web browser, and yet they're being targeted for, you know, just because the copyright industry doesn't like the fact that people can, you know, share files, basically. It's like, you know, an industry saying we don't like email, so we're going to target the email hosting providers. At the same time, copyright holders complain that the system makes it too difficult to police platforms for infringing content. Platforms have no obligation to proactively filter content submitted by users, and they shouldn't. And copyright holders say they're forced to play an endless game of whack-a-mole against infringing content. Article 13 is designed to shift the balance of copyright law. You know, copyright does not work in a world where there are places that you can host content for which the law doesn't apply. And there's, or for that matter, there's enough different laws where you can just shift jurisdictions willy-nilly, and you know it doesn't work. Just because one country says okay, I'll enforce, you know, copyright or you know some resemblance of it, doesn't mean that every other country or every region is going to necessarily enforce copyright. And it's interesting because even when we're looking at like say countries, often there's countries that don't even have control over their own populations, or at least not their whole populations. Like look at Pakistan, for instance. There are entirely lawless regions of Pakistan where the law is essentially whatever a regional, I don't know if you want to call them warlord or warlord might not be the best phrase, but chief basically. There's just lots of different chiefdoms, I guess. And the point that I'm trying to make here is that the Pakistan government doesn't have control over these areas. So the entire idea that you're going to be able to enforce copyright everywhere, it just doesn't, you know, it's not realistic. And you might be able to implement censorship systems, but that's a really terrible solution, because the reality is different countries have different copyright laws. So what might be illegal in one country, even if it's not copyright infringement, really, isn't necessarily going to be legal in another country. So are you going to block all of YouTube because YouTube complies with U.S. law, but it doesn't fully comply with, you know, whatever laws are in your region? I mean, this is just silly. The internet is supposed to be a bastion of free speech and free communication and so on. And yet, you know, we're basically attacking it and undermining the very democracies and under which we, well, I mean, I guess we don't all operate under a democracy, but at least in the United States, we're under the illusion that we live under a democracy. Article 13 is designed to shift the balance of copyright law more towards rights holders, while the exact text of current proposals hasn't been published. It's likely similar to a draft that was leaked last week by Pirate Party MEP Julia Rita. That version states that platforms will be liable for user-uploaded content unless they can demonstrate that they made best efforts to obtain authorization from copyright holders and have made the best efforts to ensure the availability for specific works and other subject matter for which the rights holders have provided the service providers with the relevant and necessary information. I mean, look, every single comment that's posted on the internet is under copyright. The idea that you're going to be able to get permission from every single copyright holder is just absurd. There are dozens of copyright, maybe even hundreds of copyright holders for some content that's produced, or and much content that's produced for that matter. Even when entity goes out and they license, say, like a movie or something like that, there are all sorts of other parties for which they may not have the proper licenses for. I mean, because there's, if you look at it this way, there's different music tracks that might be implemented, there's writers, there's all sorts of different authors, there's all these different parties, and there's not a system to keep track of it all. So you may not know all the parties for which you may technically have to get permission from in order to host that content. And you don't necessarily know who is a legitimate copyright owner, even for a given work, for that matter. Because, you know, if somebody posts something on the internet, like a comment, how would you even know if they have the permission to post that comment if they have the copyright on it? I mean, it just seems ridiculous. What this would mean in practice is far from clear, especially since this language would need to be transposed into national laws. Yeah, and this is exactly the point. Like, if you have somebody posting content, well, does this mean all you have to do is have them check a box that says, I swear to be the owner or have permission to otherwise post this content? And does that, you know, because this is that reasonable, what is it? Is that reasonable within this, the context of this law? We don't actually have the law, and this is the other problem. We don't even have the law. Because of the way these systems work. It's like there's an EU bill. I'm not sure of the details, but it's something like the EU passes something, and then each individual country has to pass a law based on that. So like, we don't even really know what each individual country will pass ultimately, and it's, the whole thing is really messed up. Transposed into international laws of more than two dozen EU member countries, but the last requirement seems to be mandating that platforms hosting user-generated content adopt filtering technology akin to YouTube Content ID system, which means that they would have to license something, which is, again, this is also conceptually really messed up. So I can't speak to Europe, and I don't know that Europe has anything like this, and I don't think they do. But like, in the United States, there's a concept where a company can't be made to produce technology or add functionality to a product in order to, achieve, like, say, a backdoor or, some sort of copyright enforcement system. And that's what they're basically demanding. And this is kind of why Apple was not forced to assist in I guess, cracking a murderer's phone after, well, I mean, he died, and he basically, Apple wasn't forced to assist law enforcement in cracking the phone. At a minimum, it would give copyright holders more leverage as they pressure sites to more actively police content that's hosted on their sites. Well, no, they shouldn't have to, because platforms should not be the copyright police. They don't have the means to police the content. And as much content is being produced, it has to be up to the copyright owner to whichever degree that we even accept the law allows copyright to exist. An obvious issue here is that Google says it has spent over $100 million in developing Content ID system. Yeah, I mean, are you expecting as a little blog to like have to implement a $100 million copyright enforcement system for your comments? I mean, this is just ridiculous, but this is exactly what this is, you know, basically proposing. Google can afford to spend that kind of money, but smaller companies probably can't. The latest drafts of Article 13 aim to address this objection in a couple of ways. First, it allows the courts to take a number of factors, including the size of a company and its audience, into account when deciding whether a technology company is doing enough to battle piracy. Yeah, I mean, and here's the problem with that. You never know whether or not you're going to end up being considered big enough, which means that you can't afford not to implement something which is going to hinder companies from even developing in the first place. Courts will also be able to consider the availability of suitable and effective means and their cost of service, cost for service providers. And it also increases the cost of doing business, which means that even if the margins for YouTube, lower margins for YouTube is, you know, bearable, it's not necessarily bearable for a smaller company. So you're basically going to reduce competition within the marketplace. And that's a bad thing. It's always a bad thing. In other words, if a small technology company can show that it can't afford to build or acquire a system like Content ID, it might get in trouble for not having one. Right, and the keyword is might. But by the time that you go through the court system, a small company is going to be out of business anyway. So basically what they're effectively doing is they're giving a industry tools to shut down small companies that they don't like. The proposal also includes a carve-out for companies with less than $10 million in annual turnover, which is not a large company, guys. However, I mean, look, we're talking about a company that's not, I don't even know how many employees a company that size. I mean, it would vary depending on the industry, but you know, we're talking about a company that might be literally a handful of people. However, that exemption is of little practical use because it only applies for the first 3 years a company is in business. Right. And that's another problem. So if you continue to be in business and you succeed, after, 3-4 years, all of a sudden you're going to be put out of business because guess what? You now have to implement those multi-million dollar copyright filters that, are unaffordable for a, $10 million operation. The law could mean more bogus takedowns. The law also states rather optimistically that cooperation between online content service providers and rights holders shall not result in the removal of non-infringing works, including those that are covered by the European equivalents of fair use. Yeah, this is not going to work. It won't. The way they target these sites is they just blatantly send out it's an automated filter. It's an automated filter, that's not this, it's not automated filters. This, in this case, they're talking about DMCA takedown. So they're talking about sending out notices for which a company has supposed to have ownership over copyright for a work, and then they say, hey, this work we found on your site and we're going to make you take it down. The problem is that when they're doing these searches, they're searching for like words like maybe a movie is named Upgrade, for example, which is I think a real name of a movie, and there's a site that's like, I don't know, upgradesystems.com or something like that, and that's a company name, for example, maybe. And so because Upgrade is in the name of the domain or it's on the page or something like that, they get a takedown notice sent to their hosting provider and their site goes down. And it's all because of, these automated DMCA systems that submit these copyright notices to sites without actually ever having a human look at the site to see what is actually there. There's not any movie being, made available on these sites. It's just because a name happens, or a word happens to be in the name of a movie and also happens to be used on a website, but they're not at all, you know, the same. Theoretically, users would retain the right to use works for quotations, criticisms, reviews, and parody. And this, again, this is another problem. I mean, it's these systems, also the way they work is they have marks against the sites that are, for example, with Google search, targeted. So even if a site is not infringing, just the fact that there was a DMCA notice is targeted at that site, Google will start to push it down in the ranks in search results and such things. And that's a really bad thing, because it means sites that may, for example, maybe it's a review site for movies, for example, it's totally legitimate. But if they're not a top site, for example, they're not IMDb, they'll never be able to become IMDb, because they're going to get pushed down. And Google, unlike the larger sites, which they're going to be able to have somebody manually check, is not going to check the smaller sites, because there's too many of them, right? So the smaller site can't ever get to that point, because it gets pushed down the list so far that it never gets and ends up getting any traffic. Of course, that's easier said than done. As longtime readers of ours know, YouTube has received many more bogus takedown requests than appear to infringe on users' fair use rights. Yeah, I mean, this is just ridiculous. So I'm not going to go on. This is enough of this article, but it's a tragic situation, and I will continue to advocate for the elimination of copyright law, because I don't think it's clearly not done what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to be a limited time monopoly, which was 7 years on works. And you know, it was supposed to promote the arts and sciences, for the benefit of the public. Good. And that's not what's happened. It's 100+ years. These works are under copyright. They never fall into the public domain as they were supposed to, or originally intended, or supposedly was originally intended. So I'm just outright opposed. And it's also an artificial construct which relies on violence to achieve its objective. And so I'm against it on those grounds in particular. But even if we accept that it's somehow we're willing to compromise, it still doesn't do what we were originally sold as copyright. And nobody has ever been, you know, in people alive today, that's not, they don't understand this, because they've never, this has not been sold to them. All right. It was sold to people hundreds of years ago. That's how it was sold to the people. And, Today it's just kind of taken, it's just accepted, and you know, we're told it's necessary, but that's just not the case. I mean, we have free software with people making money off it. I make money off of free software. I know lots of other people who make money off of free software. I know people who make money off of producing content like television and radio content. You know, there's different ways to make money. There's different business models that you can develop, and they're not all dependent on copyright. So you can certainly, and certainly we had the arts and sciences long before copyright existed. So the idea that, you know, it's just, you know, you can't make money without copyright is ridiculous. All right. So the next story we're going to go into is from The Verge. Privacy advocate held at gunpoint after a license plate reader database mistake, lawsuit alleges. You know, before I even get into this story, I have to wonder if this is not being people being targeted. It seems to me like there's a lot of people, and in my own experience, that are people that are targeted by, you know, bureaucracies and government agents of the government, basically, just based off of the fact that they are basically against, you know, whatever those systems are that are in place. And it could be a mistake. There are certainly a lot of errors, as this article is going to go into, but at the same time, these are also you know, well-known figures, and I've seen people targeted again and again and again. you know, and it's not necessarily, you know, people just being, you know, arrested or held at gunpoint or whatnot. It's people being targeted with accusations that just there's no basis for those accusations. And it's to undermine people's reputation because, you know, government can't always successfully make any kind of legitimate argument against, you know, against these people. So they just, you know, they make arrests based on non-existent accusations and conduct searches that suggest that the person did something. And, you know, it, you know, people think, oh, well, they arrested them, so they must have some sort of evidence. And that's just not, often that's just not the case. There isn't any evidence. There's somebody who is, you know, there's some government agent that gets up on the stand, and I don't even know if they do that really, but something to this effect, they get up on the stand and they say, hey, yeah, this IP address matches, you know, some site, and therefore we need the address from the ISP. They get the address, and then they can go and they conduct a search. And then, of course, that comes out, you know, in the newspaper for whatever. And it undermines that individual, even though there was never any actual, you know, that never really happened. It's just some agent lied, basically. And it doesn't take much at all in order to get a search warrant. So, Bay Area police pulled over a California privacy advocate and held him at gunpoint after a database error caused a license plate reader to flag a car as stolen, a lawsuit alleges. Yeah, I mean, the license plates, I think, are a threat, even if they were less of a threat at the time in which they were introduced. They're a threat to our privacy. They are used to track individuals and vehicles. And there's a lot of really bad things that are being done. People should be free to travel without being tracked by the government. Brian Hoffer, chair of Oakland's Privacy Advisory Commission, said in a suit filed in December that he had rented a car and was traveling with his brother in November when he was pulled over by a Contra Costa Sheriff's Office deputy, and more police cars joined. Hoffer alleges that an officer had a gun drawn and told him and his brother to exit the rental car, and that a deputy injured his brother by throwing him to the ground. Yeah, does that really surprise anybody? Anybody who's watched like television shows, you know, or movies or entertainment in general, I mean, they know how these officers respond. They literally use violence against these people, and they don't even have any reason to believe that they're necessarily a danger to it, or the people that they're arresting or detaining are a threat or potentially will cause injury to themselves. The default is to assume that they are a threat. And then they basically take them down in a very violent and aggressive manner. The suit alleges the officers then searched the car without consent, and after checking the brothers' IDs, told them an automatic license plate reader had detected that the car they were in was stolen. Yeah, I mean, they should have gotten, once the people had been detained, they should have gotten, done a little bit of research and determined whether or not this individual was actually, it's not like there is a situation today where they cannot, they're, you know, in the 50s, maybe this would have been reasonable. Well, I mean, they didn't even have these license plate readers in the 50s, but the point is that if somebody had information in maybe in the 50s, you know, about a car that was stolen to pull them over and, you know, detain them and so forth, it might have been more reasonable because there was no way to communicate with, and I mean, I guess I had radios maybe in the 50s, but if we go back far enough, there was no way to communicate to determine whether or not there had been a mistake made or anything. And today we have the technology to do that. So we should have a higher standard. We have better technology, so the standards should increase as a result, but it doesn't. In fact, we shouldn't. I mean, this is all the more reason we shouldn't have license plates. It's not like you cannot make arrests with just because somebody doesn't have a license or doesn't have a license plate or doesn't have, you know, whatever it is. Even if we don't have a name, officers can arrest somebody under a John Doe as basically a John Doe, and until they've identified them. And so the idea that we need to tag ourselves, you know, with a license plate is just ridiculous. Offer, according to the suit, let an officer check the rental car app on his phone to prove he'd rented it. After allegedly spending about 40 minutes detained by the officers, the two brothers were released. The complaint filed against multiple officers alleged that the incident was a violation of his officer's Fourth Amendment rights. The deputy sheriff involved in this case followed procedure and acted appropriately. The problem is the procedure is inappropriate. A spokesperson for the sheriff's office said in a statement, the vehicle was reported stolen. As the car was occupied, a high-risk enforcement stop was conducted. Once it was confirmed that the driver was not a suspect, he was removed from the patrol car and the handcuffs removed. He was released at the scene. The spokesperson added that the car was stolen at one point, but that for an unknown reason, the system wasn't updated after the stolen car was recovered. The Contra Costa Sheriff's Office did not immediately respond to a request for comment, but in an interview with KTVU, Hoffer acknowledged the irony of law enforcement pulling over a privacy advocate after an error. They picked up the wrong guy. He told, well, it really shouldn't be surprising because this happens all the time. It's, you know, we have, there's so much incompetence is probably the best word to use in the law enforcement world that we shouldn't, we always have to ask ourselves, was this person targeted as a political activist, or was this just law enforcement being incompetent, like it often is? And I don't know the difference because it's such incompetent. There's such a high rate of mistakes being made. Like every single time somebody's arrested, there are dozens of mistakes that are made. We don't know if they're being targeted. I mean, sometimes we kind of do because if you read the sworn statement from the officer, it drastically differs from like video evidence that we have, which was the case. You know, I was arrested for supposedly for crossing a street, which was legal. But anyway, let's not even go there. The point is that what the officer stated in his sworn statement differs from what you can see in the video. And there were two video cameras on me. But I was, you know, acting as basically a reporter for a DUI checkpoint. And the police officer did not like the fact that we were filming, and I decided to cross the street to get a better shot. And so they used that as their excuse, excuse to harass me. And then they arrested me on baseless grounds under one of the catch-all statutes called disorderly conduct. But I was not in violation of the disorderly conduct statute, nor was I in violation of any kind of jaywalking statute, which don't actually exist in New Hampshire. But there are, in certain select circumstances, like if you're at a crosswalk in New Hampshire, you do have to cross, if you're at like a intersection with traffic lights, you would have to cross at the crosswalk. But if you're in between intersections, adjacent intersections, if you are between adjacent intersections with traffic lights, then you would be committing, or you could potentially be committing a crime. But if you're not, then you are not committing a crime, basically. So it was the case for a variety of reasons that I was not breaking any laws when I crossed the street, and I had known that when I crossed the street. But despite that, the cop later used that as the pretext to basically, you know, confront me for something that was not illegal, and then they kind of threw a disorderly conduct they actually put me in the back of a paddy wagon. It looked and felt like a paddy wagon, and it was took me to the station. They fingerprinted me, they booked me, and then they released, but before they released me, they made me pay $40 bail, which is ridiculous, which I will never get back. And of course, you don't usually get back the the money that you spent on the lawyers to defend yourself, even if they drop the case, or you're found not guilty. And this is a injustice in the system, because people, especially for those who don't have the money to hire the lawyers to defend themselves, or if it's a more serious case, serious accusation that requires more money and time to fight it, you know, they're basically, law enforcement can basically screw people over simply because they feel like it, or they, you know, you looked at them wrong or whatever. And so that's what, you know, routinely happens. And it's a sad situation here. So, yeah. So I guess I should get into this story a little bit. Bay Area police pulled over a California advocate and held him at gunpoint after a database error caused a license plate. Do we actually already go into this now? The deputy sheriffs involved in this case followed procedure. Yeah, I already went into this, so we're done with this story. So I'm gonna go on. Let's see here. So the next story I've got is a potential abuse prompts you. Now this is kind of an interesting story. This is from Porn Freak, and it's the title of the story is Potential Abuse Prompts U.S. Court to Reevaluate Treatment of Piracy Cases. An Illinois man, in his 70s sued for pirating the hitman's bodyguard, has been hitting back at his accusers. The man turned the tables, accusing the movie company of intimidating people through sham litigation. While the court didn't let the case continue, it promises to reevaluate its own overall treatment of these piracy cases. For more than a decade, alleged file sharers around the world have been pressured to pay significant settlement fees. These so-called copyright trolling efforts are pretty straightforward. Copyright holders obtain a list of pirating IP addresses and then request a subpoena from the court, compelling ISPs to hand over the associated customer data. The scheme can be rather lucrative. With minimal effort, rights holders can obtain hundreds or thousands of dollars per defendant. Yeah, I mean, this is basically blackmail. They're basically saying they're going to sue you and they have evidence, but they're not going to give you the evidence, until they absolutely have to. And if you don't settle, they're going to take you to court and drag you through the legal system and, you know, basically bankrupt you in many cases. These cases generally don't go to trial. On the contrary, the copyright holders often drop cases when a defendant pushes back. Yeah, I've been, my company has been hit by a troll on patents, not on copyright, but on patents, in the past. And it's particularly bad in patent cases, which can easily get into the millions of dollars if you try and fight them. So, you know, they settle for, you know, almost nothing, in many cases. And, in a lot of cases, you know, it'll be, you know, small business, it's not nothing for the business that's settling, but it's nothing compared to what you would have to pay to actually fight the case, even if you're totally in the right, which was what was the case in my company's situation. Not that I can go into any of the details, unfortunately, because of the settlement, but nonetheless, this was also the case when Bodyguard Productions, known for the Hitman's Bodyguard, sued Ernesto Mendoza, the defendant, who in his 70s and suffering from end-stage renal disease, I want to say it's retinal, but it's R-E-N-A-L disease, denied that he downloaded the film and fought back. The alleged pirate turned the tables with a list of counterclaims, accusing the rights holder of running a business model that cannot and should not be authorized by the courts. These types of lawsuits equate to sue, then settle, or cut and run, a scheme that is meant to intimidate defendants into paying the money out of fear, the defense argued. Yeah, this is absolutely what happened here. This presented the court with an unusual situation where the accusing party wants to drop its case, but the defendant wants to continue. After hearing both sides, the district court judge Robert Doe decided to dismiss the case, ordering both parties to pay their own fees. And this is exactly what happens. This is the problem with our legal system. You have these parties that are disproportionate, power imbalances. And so one party can basically ensure that they win because they have the resources to fight, and the other side doesn't have the resources to fight. They may not have the resources to show up to trial, let alone get a lawyer, you know, to fight. I mean, somebody who's making minimum wage is not going to, you know, have the knowledge or the skills or, you know, the legal lawyers in order to, you know, fight a multi-million-dollar, you know, lawsuit because they supposedly claimed that, you know, some party claimed that they were infringing or their kid was infringing or whatever. That it's very loose in terms of the evidence, if there's any real evidence to begin with. This was a huge disappointment for the alleged file sharer, who now has to bear the costs for a case that he isn't allowed to fight. According to his attorney, Lisa Clay, the court should ensure that plaintiffs are ready and willing to prove their case. Unfortunately, the court's recent order does not, Clay tells Torrent Freak. Granting the plaintiff's disingenuous motion to dismiss without penalty has the real consequences of strengthening the troll business model. Yeah, absolutely. The order deprived Mr. Mendoza of the opportunity to prove his innocence and expose the plaintiff's extortion enterprise. What is worse, the court's denial of Mr. Mendoza's request for reimbursement of costs and attorney's fees all but guarantees the continued success of the troll model. Yeah, it's, you know, it's not reasonable for a defendant to have to pay his own costs, especially in a circumstance where the, you know, the prosecution is not, you know, the prosecution is in the power, you know, has the power, and the defendant does not. The defendant didn't choose to be there. The prosecution chose to be there, so they should have to pay up. And the reason that this is not the way it works in the United States has to do with the fact that as a somebody on the smaller side of things, you're supposed to be able to sue a larger, you know, a larger opponent, so to speak. And if you have to pay their court costs, well, the court case would never, you never see justice. And it seems like it would be reasonable to make the side with the cash, basically, or the power imbalance, pay the costs, you know, to whatever extent that, you know, it might be reasonable. And then if one side or the other loses, then maybe have the burden become, you know, turn on that side, assuming that there wasn't an unreasonable amount of money paid to basically get a conviction in the first place. Let's see here. The points advanced by the defendant about the potential for abuse across the universe of peer-to-peer copyright infringement cases convince the court that it should reevaluate its own overall treatment of these cases and consider whether to suggest the Rules Committee in this district look into the matter as well, the Judge Doe writes. The order notes that special rules are already available in Oregon, where the number of defendants is limited to one per case, and where ISP subpoenas should alert potential defendants to the availability of pro bono attorneys. This is a significant statement for a court that has generally been friendly towards rights holders and these types of file sharing lawsuits, that said, the defense isn't celebrating. Well, Clay would like to take solace in his statement. In this statement, she and her client are still left with nothing, and there are no guarantees that anything will change. Of course not. This is just how the system works. And for somebody to think that they have any chance of changing things is, you know, it's not likely. It's not to say that people, I would say that people shouldn't stand up and fight. I think they should. I think more people should. But I would not want to give anybody the illusion that you're likely to win a case against, you know, a government or a large entity like this. It's just, not, it's just not the way things, you know, work in the real world. It's usually the people who are abusing others have the upper hand, whether it be, you know, the government or, you know, a large corporation like this. And it's for various reasons, but a big part of it is just because they have all of the money, they have all the power to hire the lawyers should they need them to put up a better defense than you're possibly capable of doing. If it costs money for experts, and it costs money, you know, for the lawyer, and it costs money for the secretaries, it costs, there's all these different factors that go into it, and there's very little hope to win a case, even when you're in the right, against the party with the, you know, the bigger, or basically, you know, pockets, you know, deeper pockets, I'll say, but that's not even a good word either, because in most of these cases, it's like basically they have unlimited funds. It's not a situation of very deep pockets. It's literally a situation of, you know, there is no limit to the amount of funds to go after you, basically. So we're gonna be right back. Give us a call. The number is 1-866-703-2989. You can check out the website at freedomdecrypted.com. If you're listening live on Saturday at 5 o'clock, you can call into the show. If not, listen to the show next week on Saturday at 5 o'clock, and you will be able to call into the show. We'll be right back after these brief messages. And you're listening to Freedom Decrypted, either live at freedomdecrypted.com or on LRN.fm, satellite or radio. This is a show about freedom and technology, basically. And we like to cover copyright issues as well as decentralization and Linux and free software and GNU and all of that good stuff. So let's see here. What do we have coming up? So I did want to get to the that there's no link between violent video games and increased aggression in teens coming up in a little bit. And we have a story from the next one I think I'm going to do is, I think I'm actually, I don't know if I brought up this one earlier, the emergency statement over Japan's proposed island law. I think I'm going to skip that one. I think this story is more interesting. So this is a story from Torrent Freak. And Facebook was held liable for copyright infringing links in Italy. And this kind of reminds me of a story about 2600 Magazine and how they were, you know, they were basically ordered to remove links to code that decrypted or broke. Let's see, I'm trying to think how to describe this properly. It's basically DECSS, I believe, and it broke copyright protections, and I'll put that in quotes, on DVDs in the, I don't know, it was probably the late 90s. And and basically they were ordered to take down the source code from their website, and then they did, and then they linked to sources that other people were hosting, and then after they were ordered to take the links down, they hosted not links but basically text of the link, so you couldn't click it, but you could copy and paste the URL into a browser and still access it. And then eventually they they were ordered to take that down, and then they tried to fight it, and they I think they appealed, and they got, I don't know how far they got exactly, but they didn't take it all the way up to the Supreme Court, because they felt it was going to, because they're a hacker magazine, that it would, you know, it wasn't looking good. The courts weren't looking too favorably on them. So yeah, and that in that case, it was a entirely free speech issue, and the courts have basically rejected, you know, people's, you know, First Amendment rights, and that's, yeah, it's totally unreasonable. Copyright, there is something in the Constitution about copyright, but it simply says something to the effect that the government is allowed to make laws in regards to copyright, but it doesn't necessarily say that it has priority over our First Amendment rights. And how the heck a court can, you know, put copyright law above constitutional protections is beyond me. So Facebook held liable for copyright infringing links in Italy. Now, this is in Italy, guys, so this is not in the United States, but nonetheless. Social networking giant Facebook must pay damages for failing to remove a link to copyright infringing YouTube video. Now, the Italian court has ruled the case, which was filed by the Italian media conglomerate Mediaset, centered around a Facebook group where infringing and defamatory clips of the cartoon Karin Revolution were posted. Similar to other sites that rely on user-generated content, Facebook has to battle a constant stream of unauthorized copyright material. When it comes to targeting infringement, Facebook has rolled out a few anti-piracy initiatives in recent years. The company has a rights manager tool that detects infringing material automatically. In addition, it also processes some takedown requests manually. Not all of these notices result in a takedown. For a variety of reasons, Facebook may choose not to intervene. In Italy, this resulted in a drawn-out legal battle, which has now come to a conclusion at the Court of Rome. The case in question was filed by Mediaset, the media conglomerate founded by former Italian Prime Minister Silvio, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that last name. Mediaset noticed that links to copyrighted clips of the cartoon Karin Revolution were posted on Facebook. The actual content was hosted by YouTube, but Mediaset's legal team went after Facebook instead. Yeah, this is just ridiculous. I mean, the idea that you can be, you know, penalized for basically linking, which is what this was, you know, it doesn't make any sense. This is a speech issue. This is not there's no way you can argue this is a copyright issue or infringement issue. This is a court's not allowing people to promote infringement or link to stuff that they don't agree with because that what they're linking to is infringing. It asked the social media to remove the posting, and they could go after the actual hosting platform that was, if they were refusing to remove what was actually copyright infringing. And they've come up with all these different legal concepts over the years that have no basis in law. They've just kind of been fabricated by our court system. It asked the social network to remove the postings of a particular Facebook group, which were shared with them, and in violation of the Constitution, by the way, were shared with derogatory comments about the people involved in the show. This week, the Court of Rome ruled that the Facebook is indeed liable for failing to remove the copyright infringing hyperlinks. The company was ordered to pay 9,000 euros in damages as a result, as Facebook is also held liable for defamation. The total damages add up to 35,000 euros. Yeah, this is just insane. While the damages amount is not groundbreaking, for Mediaset, this was a matter of principle. Torrent Freak spoke to Mediaset lawyer Alessandro La Rosa, who handled the case together with colleagues at the Previti law firm. The Court of Rome's order shows intermediaries such as Facebook can be held liable when they fail to respond in copyright infringement allegations. Well, clearly they responded because they responded to the court, at least. I don't think that until something is proven as infringing in court, it doesn't seem to me that it's reasonable for a entity to take or be forced to take down the content. The only entity that can make that determination would be the court. So until that court ruled that this was defamatory or this was infringing, they should have been able to keep it up, I believe. Again, this is not legal. This is not what the legal system has decided, but this is what I believe would be some sort of sane reasonable system. Well, I still wouldn't say it's a reasonable system because I don't believe in copyright, but you know, if it was, that would be the reasonable angle to go at, to the extent that you were to call it reasonable. Despite Facebook's role as a passive hosting provider in this case, it's obliged to take down and prevent access to illicit information uploaded on its website. It wasn't uploaded on its website, though. It was uploaded on a third-party website and linked to from Facebook. It might be a hosting provider, but it was not hosting at least the content that was being linked to that was infringing, even if it hosted the content that was defamatory. The provider is expected to carry out its economic activity with the due diligence that reasonably expected to identify and prevent the reported illegal activities, Mr. LaRosa tells us. Yeah, I don't really know that we need to go too much. Yeah, I think it's enough. We're going to just move on to our next story. I mean, basically, this is messed up, and our system is in this case, Europe is a joke. And people should be ashamed of what's going on there, in their system. I'm certainly ashamed of what's happening in my, I shouldn't even be using those words to describe it as my and your, because let's be honest, your little vote does not have much of an impact, or it does, there's not any real hope for it to have it having, any kind of significant impact. So nothing you do, even if you win, the person who gets elected doesn't necessarily, even if your guy, so to speak, was elected, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to do everything you want them to do or not do. 93 students at one university suspended from web for pirate downloads. Yeah, this is just basically a story that is gotten, it's pretty typical stuff, and it's disturbing, but it's basically the copyright industrial complex has gotten schools to implement a censorship filter of sites that the industry considers to be engaged in piracy activities. It's not any kind of legal thing. It's just, we're bigger than you and we're going to make you, you know, implement a, you know, well, what they already have a copyright or a censorship system in the UK. I mean, pretty much every school probably does almost anywhere in the world, unfortunately. But I'm gonna, let's see, the two I think that are actually the most interesting stories I brought in today are the violent video games one and the pornography filter. So, oh, I guess I wasn't gonna go into the pornography filter because I only have a link for the /dot summary basically, which is fine. It's worth just covering briefly too. So, House bill requires pornography filter on all phones, computers purchased in Kansas. So this story is just absolutely ridiculous. Two bills introduced in the Kansas House on Wednesday generate funding for human trafficking programs by requiring all new internet-capable telephones or computers sold in the state to feature anti-pornography software, and by mandating adult entertainment businesses charge a special admissions tax. Yeah, I mean, this is not legal. This is not constitutional. We've had bills like this at the federal level many, many times now over the years, and every time they've gone to the Supreme Court and they've been said, you can't mandate this kind of thing. And they would basically resubmit the same bill and pass the same bill, maybe with slightly different wording, but nothing of significant of changing it. And each time the Supreme Court was like, this is, we already heard this, you know, we've already struck down this law, basically. This is just basically change the name of the title of the bill, and resubmitting it doesn't somehow magically make it, you know, not, or doesn't magically make it constitutional again. So, I also want to object to the trafficking part. If you want to solve the trafficking problem, the solution is to legalize sex work. It's not to go and outlaw, you know, Backpage and sites like that, or to, you know, ban pornography or mandate censorship filters. That's just not the way, you know, those things actually are things that make the situation worse. It increases sex crimes. It increases actual trafficking where women are forced into sex business, as opposed to a system where sex work is legal and people will voluntarily get into the sex business, because you know they're not going to be arrested, and they're not prudes, they don't object to, you know, normal adult sexual behavior. From a report, Sabetha Rep Randy Garber sponsored legislation requiring the software installations and dictating purchasers would have to pay a $20 fee to the state. Yeah, I mean, this is also a money generator, revenue generator for the state, it sounds like. And whatever cost was assessed by retail stores to remove filters for obscene material. So, I mean, this is just absolutely insane. So basically, they're going to charge you a tax, and then you're going to have to pay more money to have, it has to be on there by default, and then you have to pay a fee in order to have the censorship filter removed. But it's interesting because that means basically the only way this would work is if everything is proprietary and there's digital restrictions on it. And I mean, this is from a freedom perspective, this is really, really terrible bill. No one under 18. And also the other issue here is that censorship, the state is not, the Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled that the states are not allowed to mandate censorship. Basically, it's not to say that a parent can't like put censorship filters on their kid's computer, but the state can't mandate it. No one under 18 would be allowed to have, and this is I'm talking about children, by the way, or people under 18 at least. No one under 18 would be allowed to have filter software deleted. Again, that's not constitutional. It's a real shock, actually, that, you know, the Supreme Court ruled the way that they did, in the past, just because. But in the past it had to do with video game violence, I believe, and not pornography. There might be another case on pornography too, but nonetheless, the point is that it's not legal for the state to mandate this. And it doesn't. I mean, I don't know if nobody's. I don't think anybody's really ever objected, unfortunately, to censorship in schools, but for whatever reason, I don't know why. I guess they would say that would be legal or something, but it's certainly not for them to force it on other entities, or parents or whatever. It's to protect, or manufacturers, it's to protect children, Garber, a Republican, said in an interview. Yeah, and the crazy thing is, these are actually tend to be the people who gravitate towards positions of power are frequently the ones who are actually the victimizers. They are the abusers. They are the ones who end up later who, you know, they advocated for this kind of thing. We end up finding out that they were actually abusing children, or they were, you know, having, you know, taking advantage of the illegal prostitution, that they were advocating to be illegal, which, I mean, it seems absolutely insane. That seems to be the way it works. And it's kind of weird because just, you know, I'm not sure if I totally understand the reason for this. I guess the logic or the thinking of these people is that if they advocate for making something illegal, they won't be, maybe they won't be, you know, alone in that when they commit crimes, basically like legitimate crimes, like using violence against people, that they fall into a larger group and it's less likely that the accuser will be believed. So that's what I think may be going on with all of these politicians who get caught, you know, in these types of situations where they were actually the people who sponsored or created or advocated for these types of bills. It would be on an all. Okay. What it would do is any X-rated pornography stuff would be filtered. Yeah, I mean, we already know that's not going to work anyway. Kids are smarter than most adults when it comes to technology. They're going to get around this stuff. This is not going to work anyway. It would be on all purchases going forward. It's going to be a really bad thing, but it's not, you know, for adults and things of that nature, but it's not going to, the consequences, the side effects are really bad, but it's not going to have the intended impact that is being advertised. Why wouldn't anybody like this? He said, it wouldn't be surprising if the bill, if adopted as law, generated legal challenges. Well, why would people not like this? Well, because a lot of people do like pornography, probably like half the population, if not more. And the idea that half the population is is a favor of raising taxes. Well, I mean, certainly, but it may not be those people who are into pornography. So, I'm sure there's some overlap on both sides, but it's, yeah. So, bad bill. It's going to get struck down. I think I did read the story actually, and it there's already, from what I understand, it's being taken to court, or appealed or something, which is kind of weird because it hasn't actually passed, right? House bill requires pornography filter. Bill. Yeah, so it's a bill, so it hasn't actually passed. All right, so let's see here. So this story is from Games Industry Biz. No link between violent video games and increased aggression in teens, study finds. This should not really be, well, let's put it this way. This is not at all surprising to me, and I think it's probably safe to say it's not at all surprising to, like, pretty much any video gamer out there. The majority of people who are sane are not going to act violently simply because they played a video game. It may, and in fact, the opposite has often been found in other studies to be true. So having an outlet for sexual pleasures or having an outlet for violence, in a situation where you're not actually committing any violence against others, actually reduces violence. It reduces sexual violence. So this doesn't surprise me at all, this study. So let's see. Let's get into the story a little bit. Oxford University describes study as one of the most definitive to date. A new study from Oxford Internet Institute claims to have found no link between the between time spent playing violent video games and increased aggressive behavior. They didn't write this correctly, but in what I think they mean in teenagers, is it says teenagers. Published in Rural Society Open Science, the study is one of the most definitive to date, according to the University of Oxford. While many studies have previously made similar and contrary claims, lead researcher Professor Andrew Prizbizeki said the idea that violent video games drive real-world aggression is a popular one. It's a popular myth, is what it is, but it hasn't tested very well over time. Of course not. I mean, look at the percentage of kids who play violent video games and what percentage of them are actually committing real acts of aggression or violence. It's a really, 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 really tiny percentage. It's less than a tiny, tiny fraction of 1%. It's nowhere near. It's like probably a thousandth of 1%. It's not anything of significance. According to the university, the study is set apart from previous work by pre-registration, where researchers publish their hypothesis, methods, and analysis technique before beginning research. Part of the problem in technology research is that there are many ways to analyze the same data, which will produce different results, said Prozecki. A cherry-picked result can add undue weight to the moral panic surrounding video games. The registered study approach is a safeguard against this. This was supported by co-author Dr. Netta Weinstein from Cardiff University, who said, our findings suggest that researcher biases might have influenced previous studies on this topic and have distorted our understanding of the effects of video games. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. A common criticism of previous research in this area is its over-reliance on self-reporting. This is definitely something that is, you know, it's an issue. It's not oftentimes scientific in any, you know, real way. It's sociologists that are, yeah, they don't understand science at all, and they're basically fear-mongering. However, this latest study used a combination of subjective and data and information from parents and carers. Although there was no correlation found between playing video games and aggressive behavior in teenagers, researchers noted that games can provoke angry feelings or reactions. So can the news. I mean, the idea that you know, news articles on this probably provoke more anger in terms of feelings. That doesn't necessarily mean people are going to act on that anger. But yeah, it's certainly going to be more so than video games. Video games are just people, and I don't even know you can really argue that playing a violent video game is really, that's kind of misleading, because yes, you are, there's no real violence involved. It's the idea that it is, you don't, when you play a video, a violence, and I'm going to use the word violent in quotes, when you're playing such a video game, you're not actually angry against, you're not angry at anyone. You are, it's more like a sport, right? You're competing with other players, and it's just within the context of a violent sport, but there's no anger involved is kind of what I'm trying to get at. So the idea that it would provoke anger provoke real world violence seems like logically it doesn't add up. Anecdotally, you do see things such as trash talking, competitiveness, and trolling in gaming communities. Well, yeah, of course. That could qualify as antisocial behavior, says Prozecki. This would be an interesting avenue for further research. I mean, that's just people being people, man. The study used representative sample of British 14, 15-year-olds and the same number of their carers, totaling 2008 subjects. The published research titled Violent Video Game Engagement is Not Associated with Adolescent Aggressive Behavior. Evidence from a registered report can be found here. This research comes at a crucial time for the industry, as debate around the effect of violent video games has returned with renewed increased vigor over the last 12 months. Last year, U.S. President Donald Trump suggested violent video games. Yeah, I don't really care. That's basically what's going on. I guess there was a proposal to tax violent video games, and there's also... Pennsylvania is apparently trying to do it as well. Yeah, so I mean, that's basically that story. I think that pretty much covers what I wanted to cover today in Freedom Decrypted. So check us out. We do have a Mastodon account, so toot us. I shouldn't say toot us. I don't think that's the boost. I mean, I think boost our posts. Let your friends know about us. Subscribe to the Mastodon. Yeah, Mastodon, it's a link at freedomdecrypted.com. We'll see you next week. Hopefully I will have a new co-host or maybe somebody filling in. We'll see what happens. This show is certainly more interesting when there is more communication going on between, you know, co-hosts. So or if we could get people to call in, that would be great too. That's a really, really hard thing to do, even when you have a nationally syndicated radio show and hundreds of stations. So I don't really, I really probably shouldn't even be bothering to, you know, let people call in, because it just is not, it's not something that's likely to happen. Although I do have to say, if we added some, maybe Discord or something like that, we might have an increasing chance. I do know, it does seem like Discord, for whatever reason, there people are more likely to call in. So, but I'm not a big fan of Discord, so I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon on this show. But we'll see. I have thought about increasing the avenues in which the show can be, you know, accessed. But even if I don't necessarily personally support those avenues, it does lead to people listening, and maybe it will influence them not to use those particular avenues. So have a good day. See us next week, next Saturday at 5:00 Eastern time. Good.